Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David For on Monday the 10th of September, recording at 9:40 p.m., and that's still British summertime. It's good to be back, contributing to comment of the day and the audio, and feeling refreshed following my late summer break. And I hope that you've been enjoying this fascinating market environment. Now let's have a quick look at the highlights here today. The Asian stock markets were mostly a little bit higher, including China getting a modest gain following the really impressive upward dynamic that it saw on Friday. The European stock markets were quietly mixed for most of the day and then slipped a little in line with an easier tone on Wall Street. But the declines are very modest in percentage terms, probably averaging out at about 0.25%. Now, in the Americas, Wall Street seesawed a little bit, then sold off lightly towards the close. I can see the S&P's down 8.8. It's pulled it back to 14.29. The NASDAQ was down a little bit more, down a full percentage point. Elsewhere in, Brazil bucked that trend and had a modest gain. Long-dated government bond prices were a little bit firmer in the U.S. by the close. They were weaker elsewhere. And the U.S. dollar, slightly steadier in here, but really very much range-bound. And the Aussie's 103.35. The euro, which was on a bit of a run last week, as you know, has fallen back half a cent. It's down to 127.61. And sterling just below the 160 level overall. In precious metals, we've got a mixed picture here overall. We had some modest declines in silver and gold. Gold, as I speak, is down nearly $10. This is in after-hours trading. It's currently at 17.26. Had been as high as 17.40. And silver is trading at 33.38, having been as high as 34.02. The star performer was palladium, which is up about $14 in after-hours trading. I make that 13. It had been up as high as 6.73 at one stage. And Platinum gave up its gains. It had been as high as 16.08 and 80 cents, but pulled back to close down $3 on the day at 15.93 and change. Elsewhere, grains and beans a little easier in here today. Crude oil prices down very slightly. Industrial metals were firmer across the boards once again here today. Those are the main highlights overall. Okay, so what's going on generally? Well, in terms of stock markets, I think it's been really interesting. While I was away, you will have noticed, no one would have commented on, the very narrow consolidation range that had actually occurred for the leading markets, including the leading indices, including the S&P and the NASDAQ. So we've had that progression, as you know, of higher reaction lows since early June, which Fuller Money has really focused on every step of the way, saying that's the hallmark of an upward trend and we'll run with it until we see that upward consistency broken. It was interesting to see the demand actually pick up near those March through May highs for the S&P and also the NASDAQ. And so instead of encountering heavy resistance there, we just had a brief pause, and followed by the upward break that we saw last week, which is quite powerful. Now that's left short-term indicators a little bit overextended, so it would not be surprising to see a little more of a breather and consolidation here. But I would continue to give the upside the benefit of the doubt until we see that progression of higher reaction lows broken. And that would currently require a close beneath 1390 for the S&P 500 index. Now remember, that closed at 1429 here today. So we've got really 39 points of breathing space. And short of any kind of clear downward dynamic, I would not expect it to take out that progression of higher reaction lows at this stage, although inevitably that's going to happen at some point, because no trend carries on forever, and this has already been a decent trend for this market environment overall. But I don't want to be selling something just after the leading market in terms of overall influence has seen its two most important indices push through to new highs. That has not been confirmed by the transports index, as you may also be aware. Now, the European indices have really been on a roll this month, and they have been and last month, they have been the upside leaders, largely because Mario Draghi has turned the ECB into a proper central bank in terms of being the lender of last resort. Now, a lot of what he's doing is inevitably controversial, at least as far as the Bundesbank is concerned, which remains the conscience for that organization, which had resisted the creation of the euro overall. But the numbers in terms of voting power, if not the single greatest influence, which is obviously Germany, but the overall numbers within the euro zone really are holding sway here for the moment, although there's plenty of disgruntled muttering coming from the northern regions. Well, that's going to continue here overall, but the ECB has not solved the crisis, but it has given it more breathing space. And markets responded very favorably to that, not surprisingly, not least because we saw those sharp drops in the Italian and Spanish yields. And that's made the Eurozone, once again, an interesting area in terms of recovery candidates. And as you know, Owen's done a splendid job in terms of highlighting all of those opportunities, both within the banking sector and the dividend aristocrats, and also the autonomies within the European zone. Now, Asia. I felt China's announcement and move on Friday were hugely important developments. First, it was the biggest upward dynamic that we've seen for quite a while. And of course, it came from a lower level, when valuations were more attractive than ever before in terms of yields and price-earnings ratios. Also, the package announced was a change from the incremental, very gradual easing that we were seeing from the Bank of China. Now, that's normally been China's policy, and the exceptions have been when they become a bit frightened, as they most dramatically were back in 4Q 2008 and 1Q 2009, when they came in with a massive stimulus. Well, we all know what that happened. It produced a huge recovery by the Chinese stock market, and an even bigger run in house prices and property in general. Big building boom, and created rapidly inflating bubbles, which China then had to move rather swiftly and forcefully to rein in. And they've pretty well succeeded in that effort overall. Now, there are a lot of naysayers around, which is probably a good thing. And without being too rude, I regard that as a contrary indicator overall. And we'll still see, I'm sure, some weak data coming out of China, as we did today. I think that's one reason for the big stimulus that was announced on Friday. I see that as having occurred for two reasons. One is the Chinese economy is obviously slowed. We've known that for really a number of months, and I would feel quite certain that it is slowed more than the official statistics actually indicate. And the stimulus, which from what I read amounts to, and Owen wrote about it on Friday, of course, amounts to approximately 25% of the 2009 stimulus, which was unprecedented in China. So, in other words, it's a quite substantial stimulus, and it focused mainly on highway and subway construction, and therefore that led to some dramatic short covering from some of those bombed out mining shares, the better ones, the autonomies among them, which represent outstanding value. More on that in a moment. I think the other factor involving China's stimulus announcement, is that the old guard, remember, these people serve 10-year terms, and then they all stand down, and a new team comes in. And I think the outgoing group is appropriately laying on some appropriate monetary measures here, so that the incoming crowd don't face a possible immediate crisis, which they then have to deal with some sharp or rapid policy decisions. It'd be far better if the outgoing team can smooth that passage for them somewhat. And I believe that's what they're doing, and probably rightly so. But at any rate, that's at least partly conjecture on my part. But what is not is the fact that we had that outstanding upward dynamic overall, and I never want to be on the wrong side of a central bank, and the Bank of China, say, is doing its bit to revive both the stock market and the economy, and I would not underestimate their scope for success in this venture, not least because China has a considerably healthier balance sheet overall in terms of both private households to the central government. The provincial governments are in a dodgy position by comparison, but the overall package, I would say, in terms of balance sheet health is considerably better than what we see in the USA, let alone what we see in Europe. Okay, so I think China has some catch-up potential now. It's been easy to preempt the start of a sustainable recovery, and I've thought that we ought to have seen the downside, or that when earlier upward dynamics, I've been hopeful that those might have marked a turning point in China, which had been has been a serial underperformer over the last year, as you know, and it did not turn, and those previous rallies proved to be brief and did not prove to have drawn a line under the market decline, but I think this one will for the reasons already mentioned. Okay, what about long-dated government bond prices? Well, the Fuller Money view is that these bond futures have risen to levels over the last many months that are certainly represent bubble territory. In other words, the yields are unrealistically low. They may well remain there for a while longer, given that there's no clear evidence that the global economy is pulling out of this growth slowdown or recession, depending on which region we're looking at. And also because of the QE and the fact that interest rates are going to stay really quite low for some time overall. But I think it's hard to argue anything other than the fact that this is a bubble, unless you're convinced that we're going to see a Japanese-style deflation over the longer term. Some people do feel that way. That's certainly not the Fuller Money view overall. So we rather see this market as ranging in a period, a slow, gradual period of base building for those yields, which will ultimately push higher, certainly as the global economy picks up. And as a matter of fact, they'll anticipate that. That'll bring the bond prices downwards. Precious metals, well, it is with relief and pleasure that I note the strong recovery that we've seen so far. And I think that provides quite convincing evidence that the support building hypothesis that I've talked about for such a long time during that ranging phase was indeed a support building process rather than a distribution, and that and the confirming evidence of that, which I have often mentioned would only come with hindsight, would be a good sustained rally up out of those trading ranges. And it has been very persistent and very strong, and really technically one could not ask for better confirmation at this stage. Now, these markets are a little bit overbought in the short term, and they've been overbought for a while, but that is not all that unusual for markets that have have completed a long corrective phase. And what normally happens is that the rallies eventually slow and move into more of a ranging step sequence phase before eventually boiling over. Well, we may have begun the ranging step sequence phase, but there's little evidence that we boiled over, although markets are short-term overbought. But that's based on stochastic indicators, which get overbought very, very quickly when you get a strong run like this. Far more important than that short-term overbought condition, in my opinion, is the fact that the fundamental background involving low interest rates, plenty of liquidity in the marketplace, which we know is going to undermine the purchasing power of these fiat currencies, really just increases the overall hard money appeal of gold and other precious metals. And I think that will be reflected by the gains that we see over the next year or more. And my script for this was, as you know, breakouts as we got into the September period, breakouts of the trading ranges, that support building phase that I've referred to on so many occasions, and then a good strong rally through to year end and new highs for gold and probably a number of the other precious metals at some stage in 2013. So we'll monitor it, of course, every weekday that these markets are open. But so far, so good. And I feel that this is a real opportunity, as I've mentioned on so many occasions. And it's important when that chart action changes as dramatically as it has that we recognize that that period of dangerous volatility and a lot of downside spikes that we saw during the first half of this medium-term correction, what I referred to as the distribution phase, has now given way to the second half within this medium-term correction, which is the accumulation phase in which investment demand lifts these prices. I also think that China's stimulus is very good in terms of platinum and palladium. Because all that road building that's taking place, well, what happens when you build a lot more roads and the economy, well, even a soft economy, and China's economy is stronger than most, more people buy cars, more people want to drive, they take longer trips, and platinum and palladium have major industrial uses as catalytic converters. So I think that causes them to look very attractive. They were highly attractive on a short-term basis. They're a bit overbought, as you know, but they look attractive on a medium to longer-term basis, in my view. Then we also have the unpleasant and worrying strikes in the South African mining sector due to that militant union dispute. Now, that is compromising production, not least for platinum, and there's a risk that it could also spill over into the gold mines as well. Hopefully not for South Africa's sake, but already more investors have recognized the possible risks and have put on long hedges in these markets, and I think more are likely to do so. Now, in terms of risks, I don't think the immediate risk is the Eurozone. Given the measures that Super Mario Draghi has taken at the ECB, I think the biggest risk is still the crude oil price. And the story there is unchanged. Demand is still declining in the OECD countries, but pushing higher in the growth economies. But I do not feel that demand is sufficient to sustain these prices for Brent crude up around the $115 level. However, there are plenty of long hedges in that market against instability in the Middle East, not least regarding Iran. And that's a situation that's going to participate for a good while longer. Hopefully, though, we don't have anything that causes a dramatic spike in that crude oil price, and that really would be a game changer, as both Owen and I have mentioned on so many other occasions, and as we have seen in the past. But overall, an interesting and exciting time. The most interesting of all, I think, are now precious metals moving back towards the higher side of their broad trading ranges, and looking at the recovery potential in industrial metals, which have been really aligned with developments and sentiment towards China all along. I expect that to improve, and that will cause some very good additional upside moves in these mining shares, in our view. And I think that's a wrap. All the best.